for Fun Friday, we are going to be reacting to the first video that I ever filmed at PragerU, ever being here in the PragerU office for the first time meeting everybody, the first time meeting Will. And it's a video where Will and I have to read pickup lines to each other. Will, how do you feel about that? Well, you're so funny. I don't feel like it was that awkward at all. What about you, Taylor? Were you there for that? Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Taylor wrote the pickup lines for it. Will, were those pickup lines any good? Not at all. And scene, ladies and gentlemen, I am here hosting Will and Amala Live by myself. I think I'm going crazy without the boys here. Luckily, I'm not completely by myself. I do have Scott in the building, and Scott is going to be joining the show for some time today to give commentary to sort of cushion me in in my hosting solo of this show. But you know, I'm not totally alone. I do have virtual versions of Will here. I do have, you know, Taylor in spirit is in my mind, guiding me, keeping me on track when it comes to subject matter and making me more profound, as Taylor does. The first thing that I want to show you guys is an update from Will while he's on the road. He's in Florida today doing his book tour. He's actually about to do a speaking engagement right now. So here is your update from Will.
What's up, Will and Amala Live viewers? Will Witt here. Right now, I'm in Orlando. I'm about to drive to Tampa. It's about 2 hours away, so it's not going to be that bad, but just want to let you guys know that Florida's way better than California.
Oh, you might not be able to even hear Will in this one. Let me pull it up for you. We're having some technical difficulties that Scott is going to come and fix. But right now, Will is in Tampa. So he's doing a tour for his book, How to Win Friends and Influence Enemies. And guys, Will announced yesterday that his book is a national bestseller. So put some congratulations down below for Will, because that is an amazing feat. And Will is doing all of that at 25. He wrote this book. He spent months writing this book. And now it is a national bestseller. And I'll go ahead and say, I will sing praises for Will, which I don't normally do on this show. But to be 25, to write a book like this, and to then have it be a national bestseller and go on tour everywhere and influence all these young people is really a great thing. And now he's in my home state, you know, where I used to hold it down in Florida, and he's enjoying it. So I'm happy to hear it. Now let's get into the update from Will, and hopefully you can hear it.
What's up, Will and Amala Live viewers? Will Witt here. Right now, I'm in Orlando. I'm about to drive to Tampa. It's about 2 hours away, so it's not going to be that bad, but just want to let you guys know that Florida's way better than California. Man, everything that happens in California, it's like, why can't you just be free like a place like Florida? Everyone loves it here. I mean, yeah, it's pretty hot and there's massive bugs, but who cares about all that? I don't care. It's so much better than California in every single way. I think every single conservative in California should move to the state of Florida and make it just a massive conservative stronghold. That's what I think we should do. And so, you know, Amala, Taylor, just putting it out there for you guys. Let's start thinking about it. I absolutely love Florida. Got my last event of my first week of my book tour in Tampa tonight, and then I'm heading to Fort Myers, Florida on Monday, and then a bunch of other stops. So make sure that you hit the link, Taylor and Amala will put it in the description, for the rest of my tour stops. You can come see me speak, you can come get a book signed, buy a book, or if you already have one, you can come get a sign by me. And all the events are a ton of fun. You know, we have a good time, we're laughing, we're talking about serious issues. It's a really good time. So I hope you guys can make it out to my book tour stops. And that's about it, guys. I miss you guys. Sorry I can't come on the show all the time and make all you guys laugh and give you good information. But, you know, at least you get selfie videos of me in my rental car here in an Orlando hotel parking lot. So that's almost as good. So, all right, guys. See you soon. Check the link in the description to find out all my tour dates. Peace.
Will is right. That is almost as good as him actually being here, of a selfie video from a parking lot in Orlando. That's amazing. But yes, the link is down in the description below. If you guys want to go and see Will, meet him, get a copy of his book, hopefully get it signed by him, which is pretty cool. And yeah, he's going to be on tour for the next couple of weeks. Right now, he's in the East Coast. At one point, he will be, you know, going through the middle of the country and then to the West. So we miss him in the meantime. And now we're going to get into a video reaction that I want to do from the Academy of Ideas. It's a great YouTube channel. Everybody should go and check it out. They really go through some very profound profound issues and just some very profound philosophy that everybody should be thinking about in relation to where they fit in the world, their purpose. But this video in particular is called The Big Lie, How to Enslave the World. Let's get right into it.
And the lie has, in fact, led us so far away from a normal society that you cannot even orient yourself any longer. In its dense, gray fog, not even one pillar can be seen. Lying has always been used for political purposes. Lies cover up corruption, past mistakes, and hidden motives, and they are an essential ingredient in political campaigning. Sometimes, however, political lies take on a much more sinister form. The lies become all-encompassing, embrace all aspects of life, and infect every corner of society. This occurrence is a sign that totalitarianism may be rising, for as the political philosopher Hannah Arendt noted, totalitarianism, at its essence, is an attempt at transforming reality into fiction. It is the attempt of corrupt and pathological state actors to impose a fictional account of the world onto the entire population. In Nazi Germany, it was the idea of a superior race and an unclean people that formed the big lie. In the Soviet Union, it was the belief that state communism could work and that all could be made equal.
Does this sound familiar to you guys? You know, it's a little scary to hear things like this referenced and to think about how it's really not unique to these areas. It's not unique to the Soviet Union. It's not unique to Nazi Germany. This is part of the human condition, and it's a hole that you can fall into if you are not careful. And there's so many parallels between what was just said in that video and what is happening right now. The fact that lies tend to become all-encompassing to where they infiltrate every facet of our society. Are we not seeing that now? Everything has been politicized. Whether or not I go into a restaurant wearing a mask, which was an occurrence that Scott and I had today, fun one. Whether or not I choose to say what pronouns I subscribe to. Whether or not I choose to be vaccinated. There are so many different facets of our society that have now become entrenched in lies. And they're lies that if you do not accept them, you are alienated. You become a social pariah. You become the unclean. And if you feel like you're not seeing that now, just take a brief second to look around. Because in the past, if you had asked me if this was going to happen in America, if totalitarianism was going to start to sort of sink its fingers into our nation, I would have said yes, but conservatives are doing it is what I would have said. I would have said, those are the fascists. Those are the ones who are trying to control people and tell everybody how to live their lives. And they're the ones who are living by lies. And now I see that it's happening, but it's not happening from conservatives. And it's terrifying in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I find it really interesting that he was stating that reality, they're trying to change reality and turn it into fiction. But it's almost the opposite now. Fiction is becoming reality, or they're yes. trying to push that onto us. And those who are sane minded and have their ducks in a row and their head screwed on their shoulders correctly are kind of just baffled by this upside down sort of narrative and world that we're now living in.
Yeah, and it's hard to not be. There's so many pieces of information, they're all changing, and some people are labeled misinformed, other people are labeled completely informed, regardless of what they say. And you can tell that it's all politicized, you can tell that it's along ideological lines, and that's scary. And it leaves a lot of people, either politically apathetic, because they don't want to hop into a world that is so divisive, or B, they are just subscribed to an ideology and they stand by that no matter what. And that is just as scary. I mean, both of those are two evils. And what is the lesser of those two? Probably the ideological leanings, but apathy is just as bad. Let's continue watching.
And from the big lie trickled down a stream of endless little lies. Referring to communist Russia, Alexander Solzhenitsyn wrote, "In our country, the lie has become not just a moral category, but a pillar of the state." Describing Czechoslovakia under Soviet rule, Václav Havel similarly explained, "Life in the system is so thoroughly permeated with hypocrisy and lies. Because the regime is captive to its own lies, it must falsify everything. It falsifies the past, it falsifies the present, and it falsifies the future. It falsifies statistics."
Oh, He could not have been more right. It falsifies the past. Let's start there. Have we not falsified the founding of this country? Have we not actually tried to completely erase the founding of this country in 1776 and then change it to 1619? Is that not a project that we've heard about? Have we not tried to alienate not only the people who've come and, you know, contributed to colonialism as white supremacist terrorist Nazis, people who built great nations, and we may see those nations fall, but built great nations. We are now trying to falsify what they've done. We're falsifying the present, because now what? You hear things in the news that are completely propagandized, complete and utter lies being sold to you just on a silver platter. We falsify what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman, what it means to be an American, and what that holds. And we are falsifying the future, because these lies are only going to lead us further down that path, further down the path of going against what is biologically true to ourselves, going against what is objectively true for the world, going against statistics, going against the rule of law. And that's a scary thing to have to grapple with.
Yeah, I would say one of the scariest points in that diatribe right there was mm-hmm. the fact that, yes, they are falsifying statistics. Mm-hmm. You can see that everywhere. Yep. In the current situation that we're all in. The one that we can't necessarily name.
Yeah.
And it's so scary. And I understand, like, you can utilize statistics to paint any sort of picture. Mm-hmm. You can kind of work the numbers in specific ways. But there comes a point where the numbers are the numbers. And the only way that you can't see the true nature and reality of those numbers is if you choose not to.
Yep.
And seems to be what a lot of people are doing right now.
Yeah, and this video is going to dive deeper into that. That totalitarianism does not just happen overnight. It's not just somebody comes and goes. It's not me walking up to you and being like, well, I'm the president now, and I'm the leader of the free world now, and I will tell you what you can and cannot do. I will limit your freedom. I will limit your liberty. Oftentimes, it's people looking at a leader, and the leader tells them, well, give me your freedom, please, but do it for this greater good. Do it for this reason. Do it because you're compassionate. Do it because you're a good person. Do it because you don't want to see other people die. Please give me that freedom. Please give me that liberty. And you look up at him and you go, sure, absolutely, because I'm compassionate, because I'm a good person, because I want to do something for the greater good. Here's my freedom. Here's my liberty. And all of a sudden you wake up the next day and guess what? You're under totalitarian rule, and it's of your own volition. It's of your own choice, which is something that I think people tend to forget. We look at Nazi Germany, we look at communist China, we look at Soviet Russia, and we go, well, those are evil people that just came and took over. They just took over. How could anybody have seen that coming? Couldn't happen here. I would see it if somebody came to take over. No, you don't. No, you don't. Because they're very kind and they're very cunning, and they ask you nicely to do the things that they want you to do. They ask you nicely to give up your freedom. Let's keep watching.
When a political system rests upon a bed of lies, what can be done to turn the tide back towards truth and freedom? In this video, drawing from the insights of Alexander Solzhenitsyn and Václav Havel, we are going to explore this question. The day before he was exiled from the Soviet Union, Alexander Solzhenitsyn published a short essay titled Live Not by Lies, and in it he wrote, "We are approaching the brink. Already a universal spiritual demise is upon us. A physical one is about to flare up and engulf us and our children, while we continue to smile sheepishly and babble. But what can we do to stop it? We haven't the strength. But we can do everything. Even if we comfort and lie to ourselves that this is not so. It is not they who are guilty of everything, but we ourselves, only we." When a state turns totalitarian, the individuals who live in these societies are not merely its victims. All the totalitarian regimes of the 20th century rose to power amidst thunderous applause, as many citizens openly called for the brutal control that defines this form of rule. Without mass support and compliance, the minority in the ruling class would be but paper tigers. The responsibility for the oppression, suffering, and loss of life that comes in the wake of totalitarianism, therefore, cannot be placed exclusively on politicians and bureaucrats. A large portion of responsibility must be placed on the citizens who support this form of rule, or else do nothing to resist. Václav Havel explains in his book, The Power of the Powerless. There is obviously something in human beings which responds to this totalitarian system. Human beings are compelled to live within a lie, but they can be compelled to do so only because they are in fact capable of living in this way. Therefore, not only does the system alienate humanity, but at the same time, alienated humanity supports this system as its own involuntary master plan, as a degenerate image of its own degeneration, as a record of people's own failure as individuals. If the fuel for the growth of totalitarianism is weak and fearful individuals, then a cure is a personal revolution that takes place in hearts and minds and leads to an awakening of self-responsibility, courage, and strength.
Absolutely. I love that sentence. It's an awakening in the hearts of minds that leads to self-responsibility, courage, and strength. As I said on the show yesterday, and as Zuby said on the show when he was on it, you can go through a frightening situation. Right now, we're in a pretty frightening situation, I think, for many people in all walks of life. It doesn't matter really what social issue we're talking about. But you can go through that situation. You can look up and say, somebody tell me what to do. Somebody tell me what I need to do right now. Or you can look in and have yourself figure out what you need and what your family needs and what your community needs. And then you can do that. But so often now, people feel the urge to look up. Now, we saw this in Australia. Again, while the bureaucrats and the elites in Australia are to blame, the people are also to blame. Australia, functions on voting, and they get to vote who goes into power in their country. They also gave up their guns, which was significant to what is happening right now, and which is an extreme safeguard for as to why this is not happening in the United States right now, because we are an armed citizenry, at least for now. But totalitarianism is often brought on willingly by the people. And Australia is the extreme case of that we're seeing right now. And people look at that and they go, well, I feel removed from that. That's not us. It's not the United States. It very well could be. It very easily could be. And we are slowly creeping towards that plane.
Yeah, that's terrifying. I have to pause there for a moment.
Yeah.
One thing that comes to mind, something that Havel said way back in the day when he himself and the Czechoslovakian people were fighting against this tyranny, mm-hmm. Is the tragedy of modern man isn't so much that they know less and less about their meaning of life. Mm-hmm. It's that they care less and less. And I feel like we're falling into that pit where it's just like, oh, well, the experts know best. The politicians have been voted in. They are speaking for the people. Anybody else besides myself knows what's good for me.
Yeah.
And that's what's so scary is people are just, dishing off and brokering their meaning to somebody else and letting them to decide. And it's frightening.
People don't have agency anymore, and they don't want agency, which is funny. It's the amount of people that I saw that said, well, they know better than I do, and I should just let them tell me what I need to do. And I will wake up every morning and I will go online and I will look at the CDC and I will just see what they say. And that's how I live my life that day, which is it's interesting. Let's keep watching.
The best resistance to totalitarianism is simply to drive it out of our own souls, our own circumstances, our own land. To drive it out of contemporary humankind. Alexander Solzhenitsyn's writings played a major role in toppling the communist Soviet Empire, and he advised we engage in such a personal revolution by transforming our life in a way which targets the most vulnerable part of the totalitarian system, the lies upon which it is built. In Live Not by Lies, Solzhenitsyn explains, and therein we find, neglected by us, the simplest, the most accessible key to our liberation, a personal non-participation in lies. Even if all is covered by lies, even if all is under their rule, let us resist in the smallest way. Let their rule hold, not through me. Václav Havel was a dissident in communist Czechoslovakia, and he later became president. And he echoed Solzhenitsyn's sentiment that the most effective key to liberation from totalitarian rule is to commit to a non-participation in lies. Havel called this commitment living within the truth. If the main pillar of the totalitarian system is living a lie, then it is not surprising that the fundamental threat to it is living the truth. This is why the truth must be suppressed more severely than anything else.
Profound, very extremely profound. And I think that's where all of our fights start when we're talking about social issues is, are you telling me a lie? And I can tell you that when I transitioned over from left to right or conservative or whatever label you want to throw on it, the biggest part of it, the most heart-wrenching part of the facts of that entire matter was that I was lied to for a very, very long time. And when you are lied to, and when you are lied to effectively, you become an agent of that lie. So what I was then doing was taking the lies that were fed to me and all the talking points, and then I spread those to other people. And I made sure that I cast a wide net and caught a lot of people in that net. So now they are now enveloped in that lie. They are now the ones who are gonna go and do that. They're gonna go protest, they're gonna go knock doors. And what's interesting is it's not even a system, as much as we blame elites and bureaucrats, because yes, they do cause these problems and they are problems that they could solve. We are the ones who are self-regulating this system. We are the ones who are doing it. And what they've done is maybe they're the masterminds behind the matter, but you are the agents of the matter and you are the ones that go and spread it. And non-participation in lies is so important. If you see a lie coming to fruition, if you see it being spread, if you see the propaganda around it, immediately call it out. Don't be scared to do so, because there's so much more to be scared of. Totalitarianism is pretty scary. Authoritarianism is pretty scary. Living under that in some sort of fascist regime is extremely scary. So you have to choose to not take in the lie. And when you do that, other people will choose to do the same. I can't tell you how many people reach out to me and reach out to Will after we say things, and it doesn't matter what. We put out a video on a subject matter, and they go, I'm so glad that you said this. I wish that I could say this in my school, or I wish I could say this to my friends, or I wish I could say this at the PTA meeting. Absolutely. You should go and you should do that. And once you do, guess what? Heads are going to be popping up of people who want to do the same. They just needed somebody to be the first introduction. They needed somebody to do it first. And once you do that, what you've created is a system of people who choose to live in the lie and a system of people who choose to not do that. And when you juxtapose those two systems against each other, you will find that the people who choose to live in the truth are the ones who are much, much better off. They are living a much better life, and their systems and their institutions are not crumbling, whereas the people who live in the lie are going to undergo that. They're going to crumble. The systems are going to fall. The institutions are not going to work, which we've seen here in California. Look at all these people who chose to live in a lie, who chose to vote towards that lie, and look. Homelessness is rising, crime is rising, abortion is rising. All of these horrible things that contribute to the degradation of a society are rising because people choose to live in that lie. And then look at Texas and Florida, two states that said, you know what, I'm going to live in the truth. I'm not going to do that, and I'm not going to participate. I'm not going to comply. And look at how successful they are.
Yeah, it's impressive, and honestly, it's inspirational to see people stand up and for those rights and for the truth.
Mm-hmm.
One question I did want to pose you is, you know, coming from the left, how would you? Because I'm sure a lot of our listeners and me personally, mm-hmm. I receive the question or the statement where they throw it right back in your face of
yep.
being like, well, you're just following the same sort of beats and marching tune that we are, but just mm-hmm. from another side. How do you kind of break through that sort of just headbutting argument to let people know that no, this is something bigger. This is deeper.
Yeah, and my answer to that would be if you're standing on the line of objective truth, that truth typically does not change, and it does not change very often. So really, your views are stagnant; they're not moving. And what I've seen with being on the left, it's an ever-evolving movement, and I'm sure you guys know that because 3 years ago, we would have thought we would never be having the discussions that we're having today on these social issues. So their truth is alterable. It changes all the time. Our truth does not. It remains pretty stagnant, and we get called, and I'm sure many of you watching this have been called this. I'm sure Scott's been called this. You've been called an extremist. You've been called alt-right. I'm sure you get it quite a bit. I'm sure you get it just by virtue of being a white male. But think about it this way. Have the views of conservatives or people who lean right or people who just, even classical liberals who just support truth and objective truth, have their views really changed? No, they really haven't. And that's the answer. Whereas with the extreme left, we see something that is ever changing. One day we're calling for defunding the police. Other day we're calling for open borders. The next day there's no such thing as boy and girl. There's boy, girl, there's non-binary. There's this type of gender. There's that type of gender. The pronouns that they altered from she, her, and they, them, and he, him now have a multitude of different pronouns that you can choose from. It's an ever-evolving and ever-changing, and they are constantly trying to transform society, whereas we're just telling you, these are my individual beliefs. So I think while you are parroting the same things, because truth really doesn't change, they are parroting the ideas of somebody. They're parroting something that is always going to be changing while we remain stagnant. And that would be my answer.
Incredible answer. It brings to mind something that I know Jordan Peterson just recently stated was, and I'm sure he said this multiple times, but not as poignantly here, but mm-hmm. that in terms of religion and ideology, religion is something that asks a great task of you mm-hmm. as an individual, whereas ideology asks others that great task or something that they must do for you.
Right.
And that kind of loosely connects to kind of what you're saying.
100%
those on the right, the truth remains the truth mm-hmm. and it's foundational. And yet those on the left, it's just this strange amorphous blob that continues to grow and yep. change at all times. So it is interesting. So
yeah, on the right we say, well, I subscribe to the truth. All that I ask of you is that you leave me alone and you allow me to subscribe to that truth. On the left they say, well, everybody has a truth, and when you are around a person that has a certain truth, you must subscribe to that truth. And if I deem something to be true, then I need to transform society to deem that as true as well. I don't want to be left alone. I want to infringe upon you. And all that we ask is that you don't infringe upon us. That is the simple and plain ask that we have, yet we don't get it. Now let's keep watching.
To engage in a non-participation in lies, or in Havel's terminology, to live within the truth, is to stop parroting the lies of the state and to refrain from acting in ways which conform to state propaganda. It is to resolve to live as freely and authentically as possible, to boldly express our individuality and spontaneity. Spontaneity, with its incalculability, wrote Hannah Arendt, is the greatest of all obstacles to total domination over man. It is to follow our conscience and place morality above unjust laws, to fearlessly pursue personal and communal values, and to give voice to our thoughts undeterred by ridicule. To live within the truth is to act in ways which promote a cultural reawakening, thus serving as a counterforce to the totalitarian system's course of march towards cultural stagnation, suffering, and death. Our way must be, never knowingly support lies.
I think we're going to stop this video here. If you guys want to go and watch it, it is called The Big Lie, How to Enslave the World, by a YouTube channel called Academy of Ideas. And I think that's an important place to stop. Our way must be never knowingly support lies. And of course, there are a lot of people, which is the sad part is there's a lot of people specifically on the left that are supporting lies, but they're not doing so knowingly and they don't realize that that's happening to them. And that's where I was. And that's an unfortunate situation to be in. And in that case, I guess ignorance is bliss. You don't know that you're supporting lies. But if you see something that has been falsified and propagandized, and you know that it has, and you know that there are people, whether those be the bureaucrats and elites or the agents who have been manipulated on the ground floor who are pushing this lie, do not go along with it. Because as soon as you have given up that, as soon as you have conceded that ground, it's done. It's gone. And we've learned that over and over. It seems that we've never fully learned the lesson that when we concede ground, it's ground that is lost. But I think now more than ever, we are seeing that to be the case. And an important part of all of this that is happening is telling the truth, learning the truth, making sure that your kids learn the truth. Because like he said in this video, if you can falsify the the past, if you can falsify the present, and if you can falsify the future, you've done your job. You've completely indoctrinated a person. And it starts with falsifying the past, because we will view our presence as something that is ever shifting if we can go and alter the past and make people confused about that and make people have a different vision of that. Because our institutions and our systems are unimportant if they're based in white supremacy and evil and racism. Then we need to rethink our present if the past has been falsified. And that's what we're trying to do now. PragerU is trying to stop that with PragerU Kids. And we do have a new program called TBH History that does have a few episodes out. I want to show you the newest one on the American Revolution that just came out yesterday. Here's a little clip.
It's the spring of 1775. You're a promising young blacksmith in the American colonies. Life is hard, but getting better. Your boss is trading his usual glaring for actual compliments.
Not bad, son.
And a girl named Mary begins expressing interest. You're pretty sure.
Your heart flutters, and you lose yourself in the thought of a happy ever after. But then,
look at the news.
There's talk of war. People in your town are tired of taxes and tyranny.
It's time to fight,
they say.
Defend your country,
they say.
We will probably not die,
they don't say.
So after a little healthy pressure, you enlist in the army and grab your musket and march to a field. But the field is full of red soldiers pointing their guns at you. It hits you that this may be the last thing you ever see. No more blacksmith, no more Mary.
You raise your musket. Your hands are sweating and you're feeling sick. When all of a sudden, you smell pizza rolls?
We're going to pause there. You guys can check that out by going to PragerU.com, going to our kids section, and checking out TBH History. Again, it's an effort for us to give true education to children, which unfortunately is something that they're being robbed of in today's day and age. We can see that coming out of our public schools and private schools that are talking about critical race theory, gender theory, about these horrible sex education courses that they're putting young children through. We are in a time of trouble, but there are answers and there are ways to circumvent it. There are ways to fight it. And you know what? The best formula for beating mass psychosis is building your parallel society. And a parallel society is not going to live by lies. That's why we have TBH History. To be honest, history. Now, speaking of living in lies, we are all very familiar with the ACLU. The ACLU put out this tweet that I want to show you guys. Oh my goodness. Okay. So this is in response to the New York Times. A New York Times article put out said that they undercounted how many people have been shot and killed by police officers in the past 40 years. So in the past 40 years, seemingly there have been 17,000 deaths that have been unaccounted for by police. Now, if that is the case, that is horrible. 17,000 deaths is significant over the past 40 years, I'm sure. But look at the ACLU's response to this. Their response to this study or this massive information, they put, we must take urgent critical action to systemically transform policing. Now, if there was a training issue in policing that was systemic, which I believe that police are one underpaid and in a lot of ways undertrained, sure. We should transform policing in that way. But how does the ACLU want to transform policing in this country? By dramatically reducing police departments' role, presence, responsibilities, and funding, and in turn, end the scourge of police violence. Oh, goodness. This, ladies and gentlemen, is a fundamental example of living in lies. Now, I don't think a lot of people understand the role of police departments and just how important they are and just how important their presence is in a community. Now, Will and I and Taylor did a police ride along, which we are going to show you. Scott is still working on editing that and we're working on getting it through, you know, the whole process that content goes through here. But we went to one of the most dangerous areas you can go to in South Central LA to go along with these police officers and do a ride along with them to see what their job is like every day. And you have no clue what police officers go through and just how hard and profound the work is that they're doing until you go and do that. Now, these police officers took us through neighborhoods that are completely, completely overrun with drugs, gang violence, prostitution, anything that you can think of. And what these police officers do is they go in large groups, even in a small residential area. It's so overrun by gangs that they have to have 10 police officers that are constantly patrolling that area. And they show up in this neighborhood. And this neighborhood in particular that we went into was a Hispanic neighborhood, over 70% Hispanic. But when you roll into it, it is surrounded by black people who are all part of the Bounty Hunter Bloods gang. And they're wearing their red paraphernalia and they're there in the neighborhood. And they don't live there. They've taken over the neighborhood. And what happens is the people living there, these Hispanic people, because there is a race war between these two races, will not even leave their apartments, will not even come out of their homes. Their children are not allowed to play in the front yard because these people are there terrorizing them. And guess what? These police officers show up and these kids are able to go in their front yard and play. People are able to leave their homes. There are Hispanic mothers that go to their front doorstep and pour bleach on their front doorstep before they go to sleep at night so that they can assure that gang members will not come hang out on at their front door. And these police officers come and they take care of that and they make sure that nothing happens. And even so, even with how much presence they have, horrible evil still continues to occur. I called the police officer that we went on the ride along with today, this very morning, and he said he was having trouble even reaching me or talking to me because he is so overwhelmed by the amount of murders that are happening in the neighborhood that he's policing. His unit is so overwhelmed by the amount of gang violence, of particularly young women being shot by gang members in their neighborhood, that he couldn't even get the time to call me. So it is ridiculous to listen to this and to see the ACLU put out that we need to reduce police presence when we've seen it doesn't work. It doesn't work.
Yeah, not at all. One of the things that also really bothers me about a statement such as this is, yes, it's very catchy. It's emotional. It's, you know, I assume from the heart.
Yep.
But what bothers me most about it is, you can say something is broken and complain about it and all those things as much as you want. But at the end of the day, like if you want something changed, you need to propose a solution, a fix, that or some alternative to what is currently going on. You can't expect change to happen in a positive manner if all you're doing is just screaming about it. You know, That's one of the biggest things is I feel like a lot of these statements just come from pure emotion, taking control, but yet no alternatives are put up in their place for there to be an honest discussion about the systems in place.
The social workers will take care of the prostitution and the gang violence and we'll send a 24-year-old female social worker to a place where a shooting has just occurred. I love that idea. I think that's brilliant. I think that is going to truly save lives. And again, 17,000 is a big number over the 40 years. Of course, that, you know, disbands and it breaks down a little bit, but how many lives do police officers save? can you get me the numbers on that? It's probably you can't get the numbers on that because there's no way to truly know just how many lives are saved by the police. But I know it's far more than 17,000 over the past 40 years. I know it's far more than millions. It's millions of lives that each year police officers save with their presence. And again, their responsibility goes so much further than deterring crime. When you go in and police a community, you have to get to know that community. You have to know the good doers, the bad doers. You have to know the children who live in that community. And these police officers function as fathers for a lot of young men and women who are growing up in these communities. They function as role models. They function as a way out. And in our police ride-along vlog, you're going to hear the story of two girls who grew up with a hatred for police, met the police, started talking to them, started being mentored by them, and got out of the horrible community that is Watts and are now going to school full time on a full ride scholarship because the police officers not only take the role of deterring crime, but they take the role of mentorship and they do that on their own volition. They do that of their own choice. They don't have to do that. They could be horrible people that go out and just target others and abuse their power. And certainly there are a few police officers that do that, but it is by no means a systemic problem. Now,
yeah, I would just add in this whole story, there's also the rippling effect of good.
Yes.
And the lives that the police officers, the lives that they change and help and support, that good that they're doing for those people ripples into the future and the future generations of those individuals. And it just pulling the rug out will just eliminate all of those good rippling effects into the future. And I think that's just something that a lot of people on the left don't ever really consider. They're in the here and now. And it's tough to just make that call.
Yeah, it absolutely it is. Absolutely. And there's no, we have sympathy, but we have sympathy for the wrong reasons. We need to have sympathy for really everybody, but we need to understand why statements like this are wrong and what they truly lead to. And I take issue with the people who run the ACLU, who many of whom are elites in this country, make a considerable amount of money, and they by no means live in the neighborhoods that truly need policing the most. And yet they sit there and they advocate for it to be taken away from people who are going to get hurt. Those young girls that I met on that police ride along will get hurt if the police are not there. That is what is going to happen. You are advocating for the ruining of lives for the sake of your own emotions. And while these stories are sad, you need to look at them in their full scope, and you need to know that they're not as prevalent as police stopping crimes, as police saving lives. These horrible stories are not as prevalent as that. And you need to take that into account before you tweet out something like this as an organization. So yeah, now downvote for the ACLU. Thumbs down. Now I want to get into some happier news. This is a piece out of the Deseret News. And this is perspective. The groups that's happiest in the pandemic may surprise you. Parents used to be the most miserable ones. No more. I don't even know that I stand by parents were ever the most miserable people. But a study was put out that says parents are more likely to report their lives are meaningful. A large majority of parents aged 18 to 55, 83%, who have children report their lives are meaningful, some most or all of the time. That's amazing.
That's incredible.
It is incredible. And it's just true. It's just true. And I think you can see it. It's just what is sad about the state of being a young woman in America today is how we are sort of being pushed to pursue career and being told that children are not only unneeded, but bad for the environment and for our earth. And what you are doing is, through this lie, again, living in a lie, making young girls take the choice of not having kids. And then when they do that, guess what? They're not as happy. And that's been studied. It's not just something that I'm saying is subjective, that women aren't as happy when they choose to not have children. It is objectively true. It has been studied multiple times. This is just one of them. And your life becomes so much more meaningful, so much more purposeful, so much more fulfilled when you are living it for somebody other than yourself.
Yeah, exactly. It just becomes richer when you are no longer the center of your own world, and you're doing things for other people, and especially your family.
Right.
You know, that should be your goal, to help them succeed in life,
mm-hmm.
and improve their own lives. So yeah, I think having a family, this study makes total sense to me.
Yeah.
It brings a good feeling to my heart.
Yes, it does. You could read this and look at it in a negative way of like, oh, well, people aren't having kids anymore. But no, people are having kids and people are happier because of it. And it's so much more meaningful to them. And it really changes the scope of how you view the world. And I love how I'm talking about this. I'm not even a parent, but when I am, I can already see what the change is going to be in a lot of ways. Of course, you never know until you're truly there. But to look at the world now, not only through the selfish lens of your own survival and your own existence and making the world good for yourself, but then to view it in the broader scope of not only does the world have to be good to me, but it has to be good to my child. And it changes the way that we view ourselves. And there's no, I don't think, you know, it's just an opinion to say, you know, the left is not having as many children as the right is, and they're seemingly more unhappy than we are. And I think when you do have children, it just changes your worldview in a way that helps you see better through the lies and through the truths.
Yeah, I'm totally prepared for my entire viewpoint mm-hmm. to just
right.
change completely.
Yes.
once little ones start coming.
Yeah.
But that's one thing I'm incredibly excited for, because it's going to bring an entirely different goal into my life, and I can't wait for that moment. So
Yeah, it's just, yeah, it's an interesting thing to think about. So to all the parents out there, good job. Good job. And if you're watching this show, even better job, because I know that most likely you're like-minded and you're gonna bring, you know, those values over to your kids, or at least try. And yeah, there's something to be said about how happy and meaningful it is to have children. So to think that people are being convinced to do otherwise is kind of sad. Now, it is Fun Friday. And for Fun Friday, we're going to start off with a story here. So we're going to watch a video that is the first video that I ever filmed at PragerU. And this video has not been released. I really know the true reason why it wasn't released. To me, it's because it's awkward. You guys might view it and you might not think it's awkward. But I'll tell you a story. So when I first got introduced to PragerU, I was, of course, 20 years old. I'm 21 now. I was living in Florida. I was making TikTok videos on my iPhone with my $20 ring light from Walmart and just making those videos from my house. And PragerU found my videos, one video in particular that went really viral, got over 10 million views, about me talking about the presence of white privilege and how I don't think it's true, and sort of debunking that in a sense. And that landed on the desk of somebody at PragerU, circulated around. They wanted to meet me, so they reached out to me on Instagram. I did a little call with Sabrina from PragerForce, who you guys are familiar with if you've been watching the show for quite some time. She's on here from time to time. And she had me tell my story to her. The story got around to other people at PragerU, and they wanted to fly me out. So I flew out the very next week after I talked to Sabrina, and I came to LA, and I was nervous beyond belief. They told me, okay, we're gonna bring you in. We're gonna film a couple videos and just sort of test you out a little bit, see how you do. And the first video that I ever filmed was with William Witt. And I came into the office. I was just sitting with Taylor and Sabrina back before I even really knew Taylor, and Will comes in, and you know, Will, he's sort of aloof sometimes. Okay. So Will just says hi, and I'm like, hi, what's up? So nervous. And then, they said, okay, we're going to come film this video. I go downstairs, we're going to film the video, and they go, it's going to be a video with Will. I was like, okay, this is going to be interesting because we don't know each other. So we don't have banter. We don't have, like, we can't make fun of each other. And the video was us reading conservative pickup lines to each other. So I have to sit at this little table with Will that I just met 5 minutes ago and read pickup lines. So I have that video for you today. For some reason, I'm going to let you watch it. And here it is.
Telling us to start with banter is actually the best way to do banter. Have you ever had men hit on you with pickup lines?
Maybe once or twice. Always unsuccessful.
Let's say a very cute guy, who you know is a fan of PragerU, were to walk by at the grocery store. He's picking out tomatoes, squeezing them. What do you say to him?
Why are you squeezing the tomatoes?
You want to explain the rules of what we're doing today?
Yes, so Will and I are going to read conservative pickup lines to each other, and it is a you laugh, you lose type game. So
look at how quiet I am. I'm like, Will and I are going to read conservative pickup lines to each other, and it's going to be a you laugh, you lose sort of game. I, mind you, have never been in front of a camera before in my life. I'm now in front of the camera with, you know, the only and the biggest star at PragerU reading these things. It makes me cringe just thinking about it. So let's continue.
Laughing under any circumstances.
I don't.
Okay. So I'll start. Are you a socialist utopia? Because you're an absolute fantasy.
Almost. Almost. On a scale from North Korea to America, how free are you tonight?
Facts don't care about your feelings, but I do.
That was funny. Did you get caught without a mask in California? Because you've got fine written all over you.
Not quite. I need you like a gender studies major needs a real job.
Is that it?
Mm-mm.
You really need me then. PragerU? How about PragerU and me?
roll out the brand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just good.
That's all I can do to get one of these at this point.
I demand reparations after the way you stole my heart. These are really...
Are you a trans male athlete competing against biological females? Because you just blew away the competition. I'm not really into men. By the way.
Was it my double mass? Or did you just take my breath away?
That was a good one. I know he did. That was a good one. My love is like communism. Everyone gets a share, and it's only good in theory.
That one's just true. It's not funny.
What do you mean it's true? Are you saying I give my love out to everyone? As the winner of this competition, I'm signing off. Thanks for watching. Remember to like this video, comment your thoughts down below, or comment any pickup lines we should have used. Share this video with your friends. I'm going to see you in the next one.
Bye.
Oh, I'm sweating. My hands are sweating. It's so cringy. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That was a self-proclaimed winner.
Okay. Let me give you some context here. There was definitely more pickup lines than what was shown in this video. And okay, I met Will for the first time and I thought, okay, it's going to be great. I'm sure it'll be nice. Whatever. When I met Will, I had no idea whether or not he liked me, whether or not he wanted me to have this job whatsoever. So we're sitting here at this table. I'm reading the pickup lines and Will literally is just looking at me like this. Like straight at me. And I was like, oh no, oh no. So I made him laugh like a couple of times, but not really. I think he was just doing that to be nice, because knowing Will now, he does not laugh at stupid things ever. So Will's sitting there, he's just deadpan looking at me the entire time. So we finish up this video, we wrap, and meanwhile, there are like six people from PragerU watching us, because they're like, oh, we want to see what this new girl can do. Is she funny? Like, is she good in front of camera? So I finish up and I was like, oh my gosh, that went so horribly. That went so horribly. I'm not getting this job. I'm not getting this job. I'm not getting this job. And I walk out and I'm just like sitting in the kitchen. I grab water and Will walks up. And he's like, you did a pretty good job. It was pretty good. I was like, this is the first emotion Will has ever shown me.
That's hilarious, because look at him now.
Yeah, I know. And now Will is very nice to me. And Will is, now we have a really great rapport and we banter with each other. And yeah, he's here in spirit.
I would say he was definitely putting you through the ringer. As the newbie.
Yes.
He wanted to see what you had.
100%.
Yeah. So that's definitely Will.
Yeah. So I guess he warmed up to me eventually. And now we're good buds. And now we do this show together. So glad that this was not the lens that we stayed in through our careers together. But yeah, I thought you guys might want to see that. I didn't. But guys, we're going to end a little bit shorter than we normally do. Today has been Fun Friday. Again, I'm here by myself, although we do have, the silhouette of Will here, which is nice. It's comforting to me. But thank you guys so much for watching. Please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single day when we go live, 2:30 PST, 5:30 Eastern. If you'd like to listen rather than watch, you can go to Google Play, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review on those platforms so that we know you love the show. Other people know you love the show. Everybody knows that you love the show. If you'd like to get a text when we go live, text live to 41776. That is live to 41776. And you will get a text message sent to your phone. Again, look in rather than up. Choose not to live by lies. Live in the truth. And thank you guys for watching. We'll be back on Monday.
Peace.